Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program.
I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times.
This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
This is the story of Dougal Moyes, which was originally aired in June of 2005.
Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and my guest this week is Dougal Moyes. In this part one of a two-part story, Dougal relates what it was like being born during the Depression years and what life was like growing up in and around the Warragul area. He provides a clear insight into his life as a boy, growing into a young man, including stories about his father, a blacksmith. Dougal takes us through his formative years until he leaves high school at the age of 16 to become a student teacher. Now, Dougal. If I could start by asking you, Dougal, when were you born?
I was born on the 7th of June, 1924.
And whereabouts?
It was Nurse Kelly's home in Warragul, although my parents were living in Nearham South. And the mother and was driven into this hospital, I suppose you'd call it a hospital, she was a midwife, by Len Swaffield. He used to drive all the ladies into the hospital. So I was born in 1924, and then I lived the first 13 years in Nearham South.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a blacksmith, but unfortunately weren't much work for blacksmiths then, because Holson and Nielsen, the butter factory at Nearham South, which used to have horses and covered-end wagons to bring in the cream from the local farms, bought Ford trucks, Ford motor car trucks, so there was very little shoeing. Then, because it was depression times, he had to work up in a timber mill, Collins Brothers Timber Mill, way up at New G. So the father used to ride his horse up Sunday afternoon with a couple of saddle bags on both sides, taking up food and so forth, and he camped in a hut up at that timber mill. And he would come back Saturday afternoon, because in those days people had to work Saturday mornings, 5 days plus Saturday morning. So we never saw the father, hardly. We were, the brother and I had an elder brother. His name was Rob. So the mother more or less brought us up. The first thing I can remember was the 1926 bushfires, because the back of Nearham South, all over the area at the back of the Tarago River, was all blackened out and so forth.
Right.
So that was 1926. Then I grew up 4 years. You could go to school when you were four.
Did you enjoy school?
Oh, my word. I became a high school teacher and a high school principal later on.
Oh, you certainly enjoyed it. What was it about primary school that you enjoyed?
To be quite honest, because of the depression in my young days, we had very little money.
Mm.
And the only person who received money at Nearham South, more or less, was the jolly headmaster of the primary school. He and the mounted policeman, they got a check once a fortnight. So that more or less made me decide to become a teacher.
Things must have been very tough in your family then, if Dad was a blacksmith and couldn't get much work and it was the Depression.
That's right. He had to go and work on a timber mill. And the timber mills in those days were built in the forests and not out. And the timber was brought out on wooden tram lines and so forth. Now, when my elder brother, I've only got one brother, when he was six and I was four, he fell off a building and he smashed his elbow. Now, there was a doctor at Nerham South, pretty rough doctor. Now, we took young Rob up to the doctor, and he set that arm. The brother never moved his fingers again.
Oh, dear.
Now, it was his right arm too. So he had to start learning to ride with his left arm and dressing himself with one arm. He never used that arm again. He could hold things under the top part of the arm. He could hold a paper.
Yeah.
But not. He couldn't use his fingers. Now, that set us back quite a lot because we had no money to sue anybody. We couldn't get damages or things like that. At Nerham South, there were two stores. There was Swaffield's and there was Ray Lockett's. Now, Swaffield's was the nearest to our place, but we always went around to Lockett's. It was a little further around the corner.
Well, were these like general stores, were they?
Just general stores, yes. Hay and grain, you could get hay and grain. You could get wheat for your chooks and things like that. I used to be sent down with a jar with some money in it to get a jar of honey.
Right.
And you'd go down and Ned McGinn down in Swaffields, what do you want? Oh, honey? Yes, okay. So he'd take the top off the jar and go down the back, there's a big can of honey there, and he'd turn on the tap and he'd fill it up, and then he put the lid back on and he said, "Where's the money?" I said, "It's in the jar." Yeah. So he didn't get paid until we used up the honey. That was poor old Ned McGinn. Each of these shops had a grocery section, and then they had a ladies' drapery section. Now, they were quite big as far as I was concerned.
Yes.
Then at Nerham South, we had a Mechanics Institute, a big hall. It looked tremendous to me when I was a little kid. And Lawrence Brothers used to come around in a van once a month and show films on Dad's selection and things like that. If a film like that, we might be able to be allowed to go. I don't know how much it cost. Might have cost sixpence or a shilling or something for kids.
Mm.
But Lawrence Brothers.
That would have been a real treat, I guess.
Oh, it was a big treat, yes. We always keen to see what was coming. Another excitement was when Thorpe McConville of his buck jumping shop show came around. He always had a Rocky Ned horse. And anyone who could ride Rocky Ned for £5 or something, there was always people queuing up to ride Rocky Ned, but they never got anywhere. And then they used to put up a big tent and a sort of a stockyard and so forth, and they had bullocks I'd call them, anyone who could ride them. So one chap from way up Nay Hook there, he got on backwards. He locked his legs around the neck of this bullock and grabbed hold of its flanks and so forth. And the jolly thing couldn't toss him off, but eventually it ran through the ropes and scraped him off.
Oh.
So he got money, and the bullock ran down the back there. I think it was sold to the butcher because they couldn't get it back.
As a young boy, what did you do? Did you have a group of friends, and what did you do?
No, the brother and I, we used to play cricket down the backyard. Every Saturday afternoon, I'd always go down to the cricket ground and do a bit of fielding and so forth. And in football time, you'd go down there and they'd get you to run the boundary umpire. But nobody ever taught us how to play cricket or how to kick a football. Most of us either threw the ball onto our foot or we kicked toes and so forth.
Were you expected to do help around the house?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What were some of the jobs
bring
you
in the
about?
Firewood. The day we used to go out with a horse and dray and bring in wood from the forest way out near Nearham East and so forth. For nothing, it didn't cost anything. Sunday morning, before people started going to church, the dad would cut it up in the blacksmith shop into blocks for the stove. So that Sunday, of course, was so quiet. There was no noise around, no playing, nothing. Mm. You did nothing on Sundays. That was Sunday. So he would cut it first thing in the morning, and then in the afternoon he'd ride off up to Collins Brothers timber mill. Now, one time, the dad, he made a little hatchet for us, and we went out on this horse and dray. The horse and the draft horse and dray belonged to Bill Carland, who lived next door. He was a chap who sold most of the milk to the bankers and the school teachers and so forth, who didn't have cows. Mm. We all had cows. So we went out this day on the dray, pulled it up into the bush, and where there was a lot of fallen limbs and so forth. And the dad and Bill Carlin, they went off with the saw and so forth, the saw up. The brother and I were left near the wagon. Now, the brother had broken his arm by this time. He only had one arm. So he got the hatchet, and there was a nice little gum tree just nearby. So he started cutting into it. He wanted to do something.
With a hatchet?
With the hatchet, yes. And it gradually fell over. He cut through it and fell across the back of the horse. Now, because they had it parked in the bush, the horse couldn't go forward or anything, so we just waited and waited until they came back.
Oh, goodness me.
It was only a light sapling, don't worry.
Oh, okay, I was wondering about the poor horse.
No. Oh, the draft horse, poor old Punch, he was all right. But he just stood there.
Very strong horses, draft horses, aren't they?
Clydesdales, yes. That's why most of the farm horses were not shod, because they were on soft ground all the time.
Right.
I managed to buy a push bike for £10, and I used to ride up to Wilson's at Nearham and dig potatoes, and you'd get 2 shillings for digging, bagging, grading the things. You get 2 shillings a bag. That was good money.
How old were you?
Oh, by that time I was getting up, about 10, 12. That was one way of getting money, because we couldn't get pocket money at home.
No, there wasn't any.
There wasn't any. So, yes.
So you did this while you were going to school?
Oh, yes, yes.
So you would have still been a young man when the Second World War started?
Oh, well, when it started in 39, I was still at high school.
Yes.
In 39, yes. At Nearham South, there were quite a few returned men, one-legged mentally disabled and so forth. There were always cases around of poor chap, returned fellows.
From the First World War?
First World War, yeah. The dad, he was at the First World War. He was with the 12th Battery 4th Field Artillery 2nd Div.
Where did they fight?
They were all over in Belgium and France.
Oh,
and so forth. Yes. So he was a returned man. Anzac Day was always a big day at Nearham South, and all. There's a war memorial there. We'd all assemble down there. A lot of fellas still had their uniforms and hats and things like that. And the kids, we all wore our dad's medals. the dad had four of them, so one the brother had two and I bought two. We pinned them on us and we used to march behind the old diggers up to the memorial hall, and there was always some chap dressed in a uniform with a Sam Brown and so forth to give a talk, and then a chap, generally Ray Moorfield, he could play the cornet or something, he'd play the last post. And we'd march behind. We thought that was a great thing. Anzac Day was a big thing.
Listen to older voices, living history on Ageless Radio.
Even in those days, the comics, the boys' comics, whenever we managed to scrounge or borrow one, we were always fighting the Germans. You know, there was
yes.
Rocky Rock Fist in No Man's Land, belting the daylights out of the Challenger from the 20th German Division.
Yes.
But we'd lap those things up, you know. Oh, crikey. In 1937, things weren't improving, so we decided to move in to Warrigal. And with juggling around and saving what they could of the dad's cheque money and from Collins Brothers timber mill, we managed to buy a 10-acre farm in Warrigal out at Skinner's Road. And the brother and I then went to Warrigal High School. And I became school captain and ducks of Warrigal High School. Oh, when we moved into Warrigal, we had electric light for the first time. We had a radio. We got a radio.
Can you remember that?
I can remember a radio because the first radio we got had legs, four legs. It was raised up. And I used to like laying flat on the carpet with my head under it, watching the lights and listening to it.
Of course.
The roar of the crowd was what the brother and I used to. It was always some sporting thing, the roar of the crowd. I don't know what station it was on, but that would have been way back in 1930-something, 34 or 35. Yes.
Because radio was a central thing for the whole family, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. That's if you had one.
If you had one. Dougal, I wonder if we could move ahead a few years now and whether you could share a few of your experiences at high school with us.
Yes, coming to high school, I used to ride my bike. The brother had walked to high school. We lived about 2 or 3 miles from it. I was... You read that.
Dougal's just given me a cup here, and it says Warrigal High School Boys Junior Athletics Championship, D.W. Moyes, 1937.
Yeah.
That's nearly 70 years old.
Yes.
Goodness me, what a treasure.
It was 12, I think, 12. Or 13. Yeah. Scored points for whatever you entered. Oh... I was fourth in the long jump, second in the 100 yards, won the high jump, it was 8 points, and the 220, I was second in the 220 or something, and all told I got most points, and I got the trophy, the cup, yes.
Were you very excited about that?
Oh, yes, it was a great thing, because when the dad came home, he was still way up at Collins Brothers Mill, he was way up at New G. He came home, I was cutting a lucerne hedge to feed the cattle and so forth. We had about 10 or 12 cows to milk. I said, look, I won a cup. He was as dry as anything. Oh, a cup of tea, eh? Yeah. Now, the dad, a very quiet person, he hardly... hardly said anything to the brother. He was really proud of us, of course.
Of course.
Evening times, we'd sit in the front room, there'd be a log fire going, and We'd all, the mother and the father, they were great book readers. And the brother and I would be sitting there. We had our own little chairs, and it was always read, read, read. Reading. I used to go up to the with the father during the holidays, up to the mill, and we'd batch. He had a wooden hut there, and a black cat, which we called Snowy, and we'd batch, and I'd do bits of odd jobs of helping strike in the blacksmith's shop, and he you see, from the timber mill, about 2 or 3 miles out into the forest, there were wooden tram lines into New G, and each mill had its own set of little iron wheel trolleys and so forth. A horse would pull them. Collins brothers generally cut timber for fruit boxes up at Mildura and so forth. They would send them up there, and also for building timber and things like that. There was always lots of little jobs to do up there. Now, in 1939, this is the 19 January bushfire 39, we had warning that the fires were coming down. So the father and I, we dug a big trench and buried the leather belting from the engines and so forth, and covered that over and put all the tools and things in a wheelbarrow and wheeled them out to the open ground. By the way, there used to be about an acre extent of sawdust, a sawdust heap. That was the toilet, by the way. It was unmarked ground, and you scratched a little hole in the sawdust heap. There were no women at the mill.
No
women there at all, you see. Anyhow, we got this leather belting buried in the tools and things like that. And then you could hear the roar of the jolly thing, smoke everywhere, of course. So we ran across, we shuffled across the sawdust heap down to the Latrobe River, and we got in the Latrobe River. There was Emil Bazin. He was the engine driver there. He was a Frenchman, Emil Bazin, yes. So we lay down in this, in the Latrobe, and there was about 3 or 4 inches above the water that you could breathe. The rest was smoke.
Goodness.
So we were laying there, and a tremendous roar and heat and smoke and the wind that was blowing around, and leaves were falling down. You had to splash water over yourself to get rid of the burning leaves and things. Anyhow, we were there for hours.
Were you scared? Were you scared?
Oh, yes. You see, the dad, he was hanging on to me, and he said, "Now, don't try and run. You can't beat it. You won't get ahead of it." So he hung on to me to make certain I wasn't going to run along the tram line into Jolly Nay Hook.
Yes.
And think I could run past it. So eventually, when the fire had passed over, you see, it had burnt way up to New G, burnt all the schools and so forth, and way out to Lock and Few Minor and places like that. We staggered along the tram line was burning and so forth. So eventually about 6 o'clock in the afternoon, we got up to Nearham Junction, actually. Right. And Jack Swaffield came along in his truck or car, and he took us down to Nearham South, and we washed our faces and our eyes and things like that, because we could hardly see. And then he drove us back home to Warrigal.
So what happened when you got to the end of high school? I guess that was year 12, was it?
Well, you'd call it Year 12. In those days, high school was B form. B form was leading form.
Right.
This was the Warrigal High School. I was school captain and ducks of school. Now, I applied to become a student teacher. I'd won a teaching scholarship worth £10 to buy books. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to afford it.
Yes.
Anyhow, I was only 16 because you would have called up in when you were 18.
Right.
And I had... I wasn't nowhere near being called up. No, I was 16 and I was appointed a student teacher at Long Worry.
At 16 years of age?
16, yeah. A student teacher.
Yes.
You were only... the tea boy more or less in the staff room.
Join me next week for part two of Dougald's story, when he relates his experiences as a student teacher, finding himself without training, but in charge of a class of 30. Dougald then applies to join the Air Force at 18. But when an enlistment officer discovers that he can read and speak Japanese, he's assigned as an interpreter and stationed in New Guinea. And it is here that the story really gets interesting. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.